Welcome to the Universal Sisterhood Podcast. We're hoping to create a place where women can delve deeper, lift their gaze higher, live freer, laugh louder, smile brighter, and be the authentic woman they were designed to be. Every human heart is created to be known, loved, and understood. So this definitely is the place where women can share their stories. So let's get chatting. Hi, I'm back. I was gone, and I know I was gone. I was intentionally gone for a month, and that wasn't because I didn't have brave, honourable, vulnerable women to record. I did, and I do. I have so many, but it was me. It was me not being able to be brave and courageous, and it was just a lot of self-doubt. I kept hearing in my head, feeding those lies. Who do you think you are? What are you doing? Why are you doing this? Like, who's listening to this? What's it for? But I know, and I just kept coming up with excuses. It was raining. It was holidays. I had six kids stuck inside, and I kept saying, oh, no, I can't record now. I'm not going to email them. Not doing it now. Excuse. I had Olivia was on a boat with school. I'm thinking she won't want to record before she goes away. She can't record while she's away. No one's going to want to listen to me by myself, just jabbering away. Another excuse. But I knew deep down that this was a desire on my heart, not for me, because I'm actually an introvert. As much as you'd like to think I'm an extrovert, I am not. I actually don't feed or get my energy from being around people. I mean, I can do it. I like being around people, but I much prefer to retreat. So I really was not being vulnerable and authentic, and I had to wrestle with that. And it wasn't until a few weeks ago when I started this study I'm doing with Abiding Together, which is Restore the Beauty, and it looks at the four doctors of the church. I read this quote from St. Catherine of Siena, and it said, we've had enough of exhortations to be silent. Cry out with 100,000 tongues. I see that the world is rotten because of silence. Proclaim the truth and do not be silent through fear. And I had this real conviction, the same as I did the night I stepped off that Uluru when I went back to our hotel, and I just was buzzing with this clearly promptings to write everything down that was in my head. And what came out was the intro to this podcast. All the guests, I have a guest list as long as my arm, to people I don't even really know, but I just had to write their name down. And I realized that by me not doing the podcast, I was preventing women from being able to tell their story. And every story matters. Your story matters. My story matters. Your girlfriend's story matters. Your mother's story matters. And we are all worthy of telling our stories and having them heard. We all need to be seen and honoured, and in that same way that we need to breathe. And we have to live our lives not as a mystery to people. We need to be open, we need to be authentic, and we need them to know how we feel. They deserve to know that they're not alone in this wilderness of life. They need to know who you are. They need to know where you're from, and they need to know what your mess looks like. And they need to know that they belong, that we belong to each other. I quickly downloaded Brené Brown's Braving the Wilderness because it's $4.99 on iBooks. Quickly, get it. It well recommend reading it. I downloaded it on the way to Terrigal, read it all the way up there, read it all the way back, and she says some amazing things. She's so good. But what she says about true belonging is True belonging doesn't require you to change who you are, but it requires you to be who you are. And I find that this podcast does that, and it gives other people the ability to also be vulnerable and to let down their guard because they've seen it in you. And if someone tells us something that I say or something that somebody on the podcast says, that it might touch your life and it might help you feel less alone, and it might actually bring light to those cracks that we have in our brokenness that need healing, need to be broken open. And this changes us, and it changes us for the better, and it helps us to become more human. And we deserve that. So I'm sorry, I'm back, and I'm back for good. So today on the podcast I have a beautiful woman who, when I emailed her a few months ago seeing if she wanted to come on the podcast, I had specifically in mind a certain topic, not knowing that when I emailed her she was going through this certain topic again. And she courageously said to me, look, I would love to talk about it, but not now. I'm not ready. And I said to her, when you are ready, just contact me and we will talk. And lo and behold, she was ready. She texted me the day I read that excerpt from St. Catherine of Siena that proclaim the truth and do not be silent through fear. And I thought, wow, here is a woman who is courageous and vulnerable enough to tell her story. So Kate is talking about miscarriage and how to mother your own grieving heart. It's not easy. And miscarriage is one of those devastating things that turns everything you expect about motherhood totally on its head. Because you think, why am I grieving? Like, I don't even know this person. And I experienced that. I've experienced that twice, and both times it was an absolute devastating blow. And you think, just because life comes early, no, sorry, just because death comes early to someone, in this case our child, it doesn't mean that the grief was any less, because it was, our bodies were harboring a life. They were creating, they were growing, they were sustaining an actual life, and that has a profound effect on you, on your makeup, on your story. I mean, I saw this in the pregnancy counselling when I did that. Women would be grieving, ringing up, wondering why on earth they were grieving. Like, what was this feeling that they had when they were told it was just a lump of cells and it didn't mean it. Look, it doesn't mean anything. You'll be fine. Move on with your life. And they couldn't, because they were knitting in their womb this life, and when it was gone, our bodies react to that. It's in our makeup and it affects our life. And Kate, who you're about to hear, has had four miscarriages, each with their own profound impact on her and on her story. And it's amazing that one in four women experience miscarriage. Among these women that know that they're pregnant, it's estimated that one in six, because a lot of them happen in the first trimester when they don't know. So, majority of them happen in the first trimester, which was true in Kate's case, and one of mine did and one of mine did later. But the grief is real and should be recognised. So without further ado, here is Kate's story.
Okay, welcome to the podcast, Kate.
Thanks, Jess.
Could you just introduce yourself for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. My name's Kate Kenzie. I'm a mother of five, and it's a pleasure to be able to talk to you about our journey, our somewhat difficult journey of miscarriages. I think the place for me to start really is to give a little bit of background in that when I was 28, I started to have issues with my pelvis and back, and my pelvis was very unstable. I had lots of treatment for that. Met a wonderful man, Dan, and we got married, and but still had this issue with my pelvis.
Was there anything that brought that on, or it just was a degenerative thing?
Look, there's lots of theories about why. I was a radiographer. I used to lift heavy patients, and so there's lots of kind of theories about what contributed to it. So what it meant is lots of kind of chronic pain and limitations, really. So that didn't change when we got married. That was still there. So we waited for about 2.5 years before we tried, simply because my pelvis was, you know, not in a great place. We weren't even sure to be able to have children, actually. But anyway, so we were able to conceive, and we had a little boy, Timothy, and he's now 9 and he's full of energy and life. But during the pregnancy, my pelvis and back were a lot better, funnily enough. Yeah. All the relaxins, I think, and the hormones.
Yeah, that's right.
But as soon as I had Timothy, about a few weeks, maybe two, my pelvis just really collapsed.
So was labour particularly difficult?
I had to have a Caesar because of my pelvis.
Right.
But it was just so bad. I couldn't. He was a very small baby. He was 2.6 kilos.
Was he full term?
Well, yes, by my dates, not quite. But yes, yeah. To their dates, yes. So he was pretty small, and I couldn't even lift him. That's how bad things were. So it was very difficult, and to the point where I was never able to lift him. So we had to kind of manage things differently. So as he got older, you know, for hugs, he'd have to climb up on the table.
So were you bedridden after you had him?
No, not really bedridden, but I couldn't lift him. Mm-hmm. So I relied on people to lift him up for me, put him in my lap.
Yeah, out of the cot, all that lifting.
Yeah,
is a lot.
That's right. I know it's very physical. You forget how physical it is having a baby and what you need to do for them. So we had to do things differently, and we managed. But I guess what happened is that he was getting bigger, and I couldn't, and my physio team couldn't kind of get me strong at the rate in which he was getting bigger and more active. So anyway, I got to a place probably maybe when he was 3, we always wanted another child, but look, it was just kind of survival mode really every day in terms of the physical pain and
so being pain on a scale of 1 to 10, what are we talking?
Oh,
look, just constant niggles or just debilitating?
No, I wouldn't say debilitating, because I was able to be up and active. But, you know, it could go up to, say, a 7. Yeah. I have a pretty high pain tolerance.
Yeah.
But it was more the limitations, I think, and it's kind of had to be careful how to do this. And so that was constantly in my mind.
Did things put you out, like, for days on end, like one movement or?
Yes, I guess it was the combination. Then you do something little and then it's like, oh, man, I'm really flared up. And, again, it was just kind of relying on people to help out. And so, look, we got to, and I was absolutely loving motherhood, loved it. But we did get to this painful, but peaceful place, really, of saying, okay, look, you know, my health is more important, and there was a real fear that, you know, how would I manage 2 children, let alone, you know, just kind of surviving right now and still doing physio and whatever I need to do. So we got to this place of going, you know what, that's fine. We'll just have the one child and, you know, we'll love him and grow strong. And but it's funny how God works, because I think It was when Tim was about three, a lady prayed over me, and as I said, we're at this place of, you know, we're not going to have any more children, and she randomly prayed for fertility.
I thought, Did you ask?
Didn't mention anything about children. And so she said she prayed for fertility, and later I said to Dan, gosh, you prayed for fertility. What do you think that means? And I'm like, you know, not think too much about that.
Yeah.
And anyway, not long after, this is the first time this has ever happened, Dan was saying goodnight to Timothy, and Tim said, how come I don't have a brother or sister?
How old was he?
I think he was about 3.5.
Yeah.
And thankfully Dan had this question.
Yeah, did it break your heart?
Well, I think it did at the time, but in his wisdom he said, if you want a brother or sister, you have to talk to God about it. And Timothy looked at him and said, Jesus in your life will help you get a child. And, like, Dan walked out of there just like, whoa, like, that's clearly not Timothy speaking. And so that kind of just opened the door a little bit for us, like, well, you know, what is God trying to say here? And so the journey goes on.
He does speak through children.
I know, absolutely. And so we went, so I was preparing a talk and I was reading the reading of the Annunciation when the angel Gabriel appears to Mary, and I read the line, you will conceive. And, like, those words just, like, jumped out at me as if, you know.
Listen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm like, whoa, like, I kind of can't ignore that. And later that afternoon, I really felt the Lord. I was going, okay, Lord, if this is you, then when do we stop kind of doing natural family planning? Mm. And I really heard now, like, now's the time. Mm. And I'm like, right, okay, better talk to Dan about that.
I'm going to consult.
Yeah. And I think it was the next cycle, I ovulated 5 days earlier than what I'd ever done in 7 years.
Wow.
And we fell pregnant. And to the point where I actually felt, we called this little one Gabriel, I felt Gabriel implant. It's a funny time to have pain, and I looked it up. Yeah, you can get ovulatory, implantation
pain.
Wow, this is amazing. And we were just like over the moon. God has really
answered.
This is God. Yeah. Like, God has given us this child. Like, you know, I got to a point going, God, I don't want to do this for me. I don't want to do this just to give Timothy another sibling. Mm. I'll do it for you if you want this. Mm. And then it happens. I'm like, wow, like, you just kind of couldn't get my head around it, really. We were just really overwhelmed with God's blessing. And then a short time later, I started to bleed and bleed very heavy. It wasn't too long after, a week, I think.
Mm.
And I think I was in shock. I knew that this wasn't normal for a pregnancy.
Yeah.
And I started to... had a lot of pain, and I was just absolutely devastated, but I was really confused. And a few days after I started bleeding, I was in a toilet, and all of this just blood clots just came out all over the toilet floor. And I remember just looking at this blood clot. No, I wasn't. I was by myself, and I remember looking at this just going, is this my baby?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to do, so I ended up putting it in the toilet, and I just come out of there just so
distraught.
Yeah, it was just like, what is happening, and how is this happening, and was this my baby, and how can I make sense of this? Mm. And then, you know, just the grief then of, I want to be with my baby.
Mm.
I didn't feel suicidal,
but
I wanted to be with my baby. And why has God promised this and taken this away? Mm. And how can I make sense of this?
Mm.
And I couldn't. All I knew was that I wanted to be with my baby. I wanted to hold my baby.
Mm.
And I think I probably had lots of things I wanted to say to God, but I probably didn't say them. I was just okay, well, that's just what happens. And
it's funny, you know, just because a death comes early on doesn't mean the grief isn't the same. Like, it's so hard to explain that unless you've gone through it. Like, people kind of dismiss miscarriage as if it's just, oh, you weren't that attached. But it's overwhelmingly sad.
Yeah, and look, I don't think it's necessarily about attachment, because when we come to our last one, our fourth miscarriage that we had, when we lost Lucy, I found it difficult to attach because I was so scared
of losing.
But that pain was no less, and that was further on as well. And I think it's not necessarily about attachment. I think the reality is, you know in yourself that this is life, that life is in you, whether it's in there for 2 weeks, whether it's in there for however long, that it's your baby, that life is in you, and now life has come away.
Yeah, there's a real sense of loss.
It's an utter
sadness.
I found it more than that, to be honest. I found like there's a deep void. Kind of, yeah, it's an emptiness, a hole, like something, some part of you has died.
Yeah, some and part of it has.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
It's such, yeah, because I have had two miscarriages, and the first one was I miscarried at home, and I had the baby in the toilet, and I took the baby out of it because I just thought, oh, my gosh, what do I do? Like, it's such a confronting moment.
Yeah.
And I just held the baby in my hands and just sobbed, just sobbed. And I thought, how can there is such a pain in it and an emptiness, as you said. And I didn't realize how much it is a part of you until you lose that child.
Yeah, it's yours.
It's yours. And like, I looked, the baby was only, I think I was 13 weeks.
Yeah, wow.
But you could see everything. You could see fingers and toes.
Yeah,
and
it's fully formed.
Fully, absolutely fully formed. And that just blew me away. Anyway, it was very confronting, but also gut wrenching and painful. Yeah.
It's very graphic in that way. It's very graphic. It's traumatic.
And I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm thinking, what do I do?
That's right. That's right. And you're alone. I think often you're alone.
And I was just shaking.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Yeah. Anyways, and there's the panic, I think, too, of that, of what do I do? And you can't save this child.
Mm.
You cannot do anything. It's happening and you just can't do anything.
Yeah. And there's nothing that you did do.
That's right. There's nothing that anyone's done.
There was no fault by any of us.
And I think that in some ways is really hard to
make
sense of because you know, we can't understand it.
Sorry, keep going.
So after we lost Gabriel, 6 months later we feel pregnant again, and you know, I'm thinking, oh, we're not going to miscarry this time. This is you know, it'll be okay. I also had the feeling of, well, realizing that even if this baby comes to term, realizing that it's actually not going to take away the pain of losing our little Gabriel.
Mm.
And I think...
How far along were you?
For the second one, we were 6.5 weeks.
Mm.
So all of mine have been in early trimester, So that happened, and so we lost Raphael.
Mm.
And again, just...
They're all angels.
This,
oh.
just... Confusion, just grief at its core. This, I want to hold my baby. I want to meet my baby. And but I think it probably wasn't till we had the third one, which was maybe a year after we were pregnant, and we were much further on. I think we were 8 weeks, and we lost Lucy. And that was probably the point where I, like, cracked it with God.
You're entitled.
And I just remember saying things like, how can you give and take away? You're supposed to be an intervening God. Why do you intervene with some and not others? And I just remember just being in this world of pain and just sitting in a little space that we have at home for prayer, and just I gave it to God. I swore at him the way I've never sworn to any human being. I told him I hated him for this. And I gave, I just gave it to him. I couldn't understand you as a God doing this. And when I was letting out all this abuse, I kind of had this image of Jesus on the cross, and every time I'd abuse him, I just felt like he was just being, he was taking it on himself, he was just being nailed to the cross. And, but there's a part of me that goes, I know I need God to get through this. So that was a funny thing. So I kind of put him in the doghouse. It's like,
you're banished, but
yeah,
I can come back for dinner on three nights a week.
When I say.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was when I say. And so I'd go to prayer kind of just because I know I need you, Lord, but my heart was so closed.
Yeah.
My heart was so closed. It's like, man, we have been through this three times. Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
Where are you, God? Where are you in this? My heart is breaking here. And so I kept him at a real distance, and it was probably about 3 months later that I must have been reflecting on this, and I bent down to pick up something, and I just had this overwhelming realization that God was with me in that. And then I just burst into tears. It's like I was abusing him, telling him all sorts of, you know, terrible things, and he was with me. And the funny thing is that that realization that Jesus is with me is actually the thing that I cling on to when things don't make sense. So, you know, you can ride along in life and, I've kind of got life sorted, or I know how God works, I know this, I know that. And then there's a little crisis and things, you know, you can't make sense of.
Yeah.
And it's like that's the one thing I know for certain. I know now for certain that Jesus was with me. It doesn't matter what happens.
There's no divine promise that your life's going to be easy, but there is the promise that he will never abandon you.
Yeah, and I probably had to learn that the real hard way. But
we all do.
But it's certainly been something that I can cling on to. And so
you can fully.
I can trust.
Yeah.
I can actually trust that. Now
that's such a beautiful thing to have trust, because most people are just clawing their way through life, and you've got something very, very tangible.
Yeah, to hang on to now, I think. And that and then it would, I guess when it's come to the last miscarriage which we had, which was just in August this year.
I'm sorry it was so soon.
No, that's okay. I wanted to be able to speak I guess when things are a little bit raw too, that it was a little bit different in that we're pregnant, and as I said, it was very hard to attach because I was like fearing it was not going to make it. And but anyway, this time we had an ultrasound, and then they said, "Oh look, we can't find a heartbeat." And so there was that initial grief of, you know, again that. We're losing another baby. But this time it's like I don't want to turn my anger to God. I want to trust that he's with me. And so there's a few stages, I guess, to this miscarriage. So there's the initial grief of we've lost another child. And I remember one day in prayer I saw Jesus, and you know, he's white, and he was holding Hannah, we called this one Hannah, in his hands. And I wasn't kind of expecting that. It just kind of came up. And it's like I knew that Hannah's in heaven. I knew that Hannah is safe with Jesus. But I still felt traumatized by the fact that Hannah's going to go down the toilet.
Mm.
And I just couldn't resolve that in my head. So we had this 2 weeks of waiting to bleed. So I was given options by the hospital to either have a D&C, to have something to bring on the
expelling.
Yes, something they call it, yes. Yeah. Or to wait for my body to do it naturally. And because of my pelvis, I didn't want any surgery. So I said, look, I'll wait for it to happen naturally. So we had this 2 week kind of waiting. And I felt traumatized. I can't believe my baby is going to go down the toilet. But I spoke about this at the hospital and they were, you know, they'd never heard of that before. That, that's a funny thing for you to be concerned about. But they were very respectful and they said, look, we have a jar here and you can put your baby in this jar if you like and then bring it to the hospital. And so we went with that idea and felt really comfortable with that because then we could hold, similar to what you did, Jess. Mm. So in this 2 weeks of waiting to bleed, it was kind of a bit, I knew what was coming, but it was kind of, I felt like it was my body's time to hold the baby.
Was it a comfort?
I think in some ways it was a comfort. But it kind of also...
You knew what was
coming. I knew what was coming and it dragged things out a little bit. But anyway, I really asked people to pray for me and felt a real strength in that and just tried to trust that now Jesus is actually with me in this. Mm. And then I started to bleed and it was like a mini labor in that it was, you know, that contraction, the pain.
Yeah, it's incredible. You don't realize the pain.
Yeah, the physical pain.
There's physical pain and emotional pain.
Yeah, and that was this, that my baby is now leaving me and I'm not ready for this.
And I can't stop it.
I'm not ready for her to leave me.
Mm.
But, you know, it happened and, again, I had a similar thing of having, you know, blood clots and but what I was able to do this time was to pick up those clots and say, you know, mummy's got you.
Mm.
Mummy's got you and you know, put the blood clots into the baby into this jar, and over the next few days that kept happening. Mm. And then I continued to bleed but we were able to, Dan and I were able to hold our little baby in this jar and kiss the jar and pray over the jar. And in some ways we were able to say goodbye.
Mm.
And then
it's so important for healing.
Yeah.
I think because grieving over a lot of people, there's nothing tangible to grieve over and they kind of second guess their emotions. Like, why am I feeling so sad?
Yeah.
Because there's actually something physical.
Yeah.
That you can grieve over, your child.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
You haven't got that. It's harder to process. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I think the thing is that, and people don't know, often people don't know you're even pregnant.
Mm.
And so.
It's a very lonely type of grief.
It can be a really lonely type of grief.
Mm.
And it's so deep as well that it probably makes the loneliness harder.
Mm. I found the shower was a very good place.
Good place for crying.
Oh, yeah. So I used to go in the shower and just empty Warragamba Dam. I didn't care how long I was in there for. I just howl.
Yeah.
Because I had to. I find you have to grieve because otherwise it sits there and I think it gets worse.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really important because it's going to come out sometime.
Yeah.
And
better to come out now.
Yeah.
And I mean, it comes out all through, you know, anniversaries and things like that. It flares up again. But
yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really respecting yourself and your emotions to be present to that grief because it's, as you say, it's real. It's very real. So I think this time at losing little Lucy has been hard. And as you say, there's always triggers. If I get triggered by pregnant people, I get triggered by particularly newborns, because that for me is one of the hardest things, not being able to meet your baby, to hold them for the first time, to love them, kiss them. And the holding is, gosh, that's really hard for me. So I find the often newborns are a real trigger.
After our second baby, I hemorrhage. I had to go to hospital. It was it was a big hoo-ha. Anyway, it was my sister-in-law's baby's baptism. There was no way I was going. I just couldn't, and people couldn't understand why.
I
can't go. I couldn't. You know, it's just some. I will come and see the baby sooner or later, but not now.
Yeah,
I just need time. But you've got four other children. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
No, absolutely not. No, it's a life.
Mm.
It's your child, and they're no longer with you. So I was the same. I couldn't go to a few baby showers, I think you just got to trust yourself in that and know that you will get there. And the healing does take place. But I had, and this isn't the case for everybody, but I guess it's the physical toll of miscarriage as well, is that after our third one, Lucy, I bled for 3 weeks, and then I think I stopped for a week. And then I think the other thing I want to say here is that, and you, I'm sure you would agree with me, that when you bleed from miscarriage, you just know this is not a period.
Yes. Yeah.
There's something so different to this.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And it's that connection to life.
Mm.
But anyway, so.
Yeah, you're so right.
It's just very different.
And then, as I was saying,
I bled for 3 weeks, stopped for a week, and then got what was, I guess, my first period after the miscarriage. And then that went on for, because my body was just, all my hormones were out of whack.
Yeah.
I bled for like 2 months, and then I got restless leg syndrome, where I couldn't sleep because I was anemic, and so it can just
plays havoc with every
part of
you.
It does, and it goes on. Yeah. It can go on, and I think again, there's some of the things that can make closure hard because my body's still struggling with this. My body's still trying to get back to what
and burst
normal.
Into tears. I used to just burst into tears.
Yeah,
and people would look at, oh, I'm sorry, I can't. I remember going to the gym, and we were doing some exercise, and I said, "Oh, I can't do that because I've just lost a baby," and I just burst into tears in front of all these people, and they're all looking at me, thinking, "Well, you didn't look pregnant last time you were here." It's just my emotions were like up and down.
Yes.
Yeah. But there's always so many cliches with being pregnant. I don't know whether, were you sick? Because I'm violently ill. Like, I'm so sick with my pregnancies. And for our second miscarriage, they thought, oh, maybe because I was so sick, maybe you're having twins. So I went down for an ultrasound to see whether there were two heartbeats, but there was none.
Yeah.
So I was like, and I came out, I was so angry with God. Like, thinking I was so sick.
Yeah.
So sick.
I had to go through all that.
Yeah. And then you took the baby, and I had to bring my head around having another baby. Like, pregnancy doesn't come easy for me, nor carrying the baby, nor labor. And so it takes a lot of mind shifts for me to come around to the fact I hate being pregnant.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I thought, so I had finally just come around in my head that this, this was beautiful, and I can do this. So sick, thinking, oh, I have twins, still trying to get my head around that. And then to be told the baby's dead, I was like so angry with God. Like, I'm thinking, why did you put me through that?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that you can't take the baby away now after what I've gone through.
Yeah.
But then you look what he went through. As you said, he, you know, the nails on the cross. This is, he didn't say pick up your, you know, mattress and follow me. He said pick up your cross. And I find that, that, you know, these are our crosses.
Yeah, and look, to be honest, I've never actually been able to make any sense of.
Well, this side of heaven, I don't think we will.
No, and perhaps some of the peace that's come in losing Hannah in this last one is that I, or the grace perhaps, that I didn't try and work this out. I didn't try and make, why is this happening? Because maybe I'm a bit older now and I realise I can't make sense. I can't understand this.
So what's your relationship like with God now? Is it?
Yeah.
Is he in the doghouse or is he, is he allowed inside?
Well, I can. No, he's allowed inside, absolutely. And I know that I actually know in terms of healing, there are a couple of things that help me heal. One of them is talking about our children. And I love to say, because often people say, do you have any more? And I say, oh, yeah, we have four others. So they're in heaven. We lost them through miscarriage. And I don't say that because I want sympathy over it and I don't, but I like to recognise them because they exist and that's really important.
Yeah.
Really important for me.
Do you find, I know in it wouldn't be in any other circle except for Catholic circles, about the size of your family, do you find that sometimes you've got to defend
yourself,
like that kind of inverted?
Yeah, I think so. There's
which is totally wrong, by the way.
Yes, right? That's right. It's totally wrong, but definitely there's, oh, you've only got one.
Yeah.
You know,
like that must be a stab in the heart.
Yeah, it is. And, yeah, it's hard to know whether you come back with something a bit, you know, cutting back do you just kind of hold your tears and walk away and say, well, you don't know what.
You've got no idea what I've gone through.
Yeah, that's right. And so, look, I think that can be there for sure and I carry that a little bit, even though I know the reality is that, you know, it's not about how many children you have.
He sees everything.
Yeah, and look, you know.
It's definitely not about how many children you have.
No, that's right. And it's not to get into heaven, is it, how many children you have.
No.
So that's certainly there. But I think in terms of healing, so speaking about them for sure. We asked, Tim knows about his siblings, so every day we, on the way to school, we always say, St. Gabriel, Raphael, Lucy and Hannah, pray for us, so we get them to pray for us. Especially, okay, we have candles for each one of them and on their, birth conception day, I've worked out, we light their candles or at Christmas and then Mother's Day.
How do you deal with that with your child?
Yeah, sure. That's a really good one.
How do you
navigate
that kind of landscape?
Yeah, that what we thought would be very difficult was actually beautiful. Because we didn't tell Timothy at the time, he was four when we first lost Gabriel, and I was just so distraught and in shock and confused and emotional. And then Raphael was 6 months later. And then, again, by the time we got to the third one, and as I said, I was just in rage at God and this world of pain that I just couldn't bring myself to tell him. And then it just kind of came in my heart. It was coming up to Gabriel's birthday and Timothy was five. He'd just gone to school. And I just really felt like, I want him part of this. I want him part of, I mean, they're part of our family.
It is his sister.
Yeah. And so we just sat down and because he had at time to time asked, you know, well, you know, when will I have another brother or sister and, you know, talk to Jesus.
Yeah.
But we sat down with him and we said, Tim, you know, we've got some news to share with you. I think Dan did it because I was, you know, too emotional. Yeah. And
I would have been in the shower.
You would have been in a long shower. And you know what? Timothy jumped into Dan's arms with joy. it was just such a joy for him to know that he has brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And then he started to ask questions. Why did they die? How old are they? Who came first? Where am I in the order?
He's all the big brother.
All these awesome questions. And from time to time, he'll say he feels sad that he doesn't have a brother and sister or that they live in heaven. The other day he said to me, I was a bit upset about losing Lucy, and he said, are you sad? Sorry about Hannah. He said, are you sad because of Hannah? And I said, yeah. And he said, you must be really sad because it happened to you. And I went, yeah.
Children have such insight.
Yeah, absolutely. So he kind of gets it.
Yeah.
He did then say that he wished that he didn't live so that he could be in heaven to meet Jesus. And I said, you're breaking.
No.
I know. I said, you're breaking my heart. Gosh. So that's certainly talking about them is one way of healing, having candles that help us signify or symbolize something tangible for us. And then I think the two main things really, and to get back to your original question about God, the first thing is that I know that I'm going to meet them in heaven. And this earthly life is short. Like, I'm 42 now, and
flies.
Yeah, I really, you know, we
Heaven's
really
going
have
to be
this.
Good.
Heaven is going to be fantastic, and I just, and that's what kind of keeps me. I can't wait to meet them. I can't wait to jump into their arms and just hold them and look at them and just. So that's a real sense of hope for me, and the other hope for me is that. I know and I have experienced when I can do this that God's love, Jesus' love, is actually greater than my pain. And the few times that I've been able to allow Jesus to come into that pain, that place of pain, and fill it with his love.
That's where he meets us.
Has been the place, has been the times where I've felt healing.
Yeah.
But it's hard to do because none of us want to feel pain.
No.
We often.
Suffering is such a foreign concept for us.
We don't want to do it. Who wants to do it? Who wants to feel pain?
Mm.
But it's almost like we need to, for healing, we kind of need to feel the pain when it comes up. But I'm not great at this all the time, but to try and allow Jesus' love to
come into
that
space.
I was
looking at the sun. The sunset the other day, and I just thought, because my kitchen overlooks the
beautiful.
So I can see the sunset, and where the light meets the dark is where it's just so beautiful. And where his light meets our pain, that's where we find him, and that's where the beauty is in that pain. I just thought,
The
sat there at the kitchen sink, just crying. Yeah. I'm pretty good at it.
Need you to help with the drought, I think, Jess.
Oh, yes, just send me to Wagga or somewhere.
But, I mean, that's true. I mean, that's what I think it says in Psalm 139 that the darkness is not dark to him. It's as light as the day. And that's, I guess, what I've experienced is that Jesus is with us in the incredibly hard parts of life. That we can't make sense of, that just leave our hearts bleeding, that Jesus is with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Is there anything else you want to say before we?
No, I think just if other women out there have experienced this, we all grieve in different ways, but certainly if you're able to speak to somebody who's shared that before, I found that also does help in healing because, like you said, it is hard for people who haven't been through a miscarriage to really comprehend the what it's like, the depth of pain, the rawness of that loss. But if you've been through that, then there is that sense of connectedness.
It's always a shock too. I remember when I had our second miscarriage, I was totally shocked.
Mm.
I'm thinking, why am I so shocked? It floored me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's not the trajectory we think motherhood's going to look like.
Mm.
You think, you know, you plan everything, you know, you've got, well, I do anyway. I'm pretty sure I'm very human like most people.
Yeah.
They do that. But you, in your head, once you find out you're pregnant, you look at the dates and you see, oh, what's going to happen? Oh, I will be, you know, it'll be summer and I would have gone through Christmas. And,
that's right.
And then when those milestones happen without that baby, it's devastating.
Yeah. Well, I think that's how we get excited about things. I mean, we've had godparents chosen, you know. I mean, that's just how you kind of you preparing. Build. Yeah, yeah, that's right. And I think that's very normal. And part of the grief is that. But I think the important thing to say that the grief, the deepest grief, is about the loss of life. And that's not easy. And that, and we don't get over that quickly.
No.
In fact, I met a lady and she was in her 90s and she said to me, you know, do you have any other children? And I said, would I normally say, oh, yes, we have four others in heaven through miscarriage. And she said, oh, that was the same with me. She said, I had two miscarriages, then I had a daughter and then another two miscarriages. And I said, you don't really get over it, do you? And she said, no, you don't.
Whenever I've told people about my miscarriages, they were, I've had one too.
Yeah.
And then people just don't talk about them.
Yeah.
And it's this grief that just sits there and it has to come out.
Yeah, and I think that's it, that people, it's hard to speak about and
Because for so long people, it's just a lump of cells, it's nothing, you know,
yeah.
It's nothing to worry about, you'll be fine, get on with your life. Well, actually, it's not.
Yeah, it's not.
It's my child.
That's right. And I think it is it's the hard thing to talk about because it's, especially at the time, as I said, often people don't know you're pregnant.
Mm.
So then you kind of come out, oh, I lost the baby, and then people don't know what to say.
They don't know how to deal with that. Yeah.
How to deal with that. But I think if you know somebody who has had a miscarriage, then, and it's helpful for you, then, you know, I've found some healing in terms of that.
Before you go, one other question. Your husband, how did, like, I found it, our second miscarriage, he was devastated. Which really shocked me.
Yeah.
Just they grieve in so many different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, definitely, for sure. It's very different. I think it's different particularly for the women because they have all the physical, we have all the changes in our body, and then of course, you know, when the baby comes away, I mean, your husband might be there, but might not be, and so we kind of have that, the physical and that kind of connection. So I think it is a little bit difficult or harder for the males. I know for Dan, he's it probably wasn't till the fourth, till Hannah really that. He really stopped and was present to what was happening because I think his default is to make sure I'm okay and to be there for me. And while this is impacting him, he was just wanting to support me.
Mm.
Whereas this time, which is really awesome, he was just able to go, you know what, I need time myself at the moment. And he was able to process cry. He was able to cry and, you know, he took Hannah to the hospital, so he was able to hold. He wanted to do that himself. He said, this is just my time with our little one. And so that was something special for him.
Mm.
So I think they're definitely affected, but they do it differently.
Mm.
It comes out differently, whether they get busy. I think Dan would probably also do that for me, like, part of his grief might be, okay, Kate's, you know, struggling. She's emotional at the moment. I'm going to get in there and I'm going to wash up and I'm going to do this so that she doesn't have to do it. She can, you know, have a break. So that can also be a part of grief, that busyness can be part of grief.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I certainly believe that the men feel it as much, just expressed in a different way.
Wow, great. Thank you so much for being so honest.
You're welcome.
And raw and vulnerable, because I think it helps a lot of women.
I hope so. So
thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
And you have 5 beautiful souls.
Thank you. Yes, can't wait for heaven. It's going to be a party. Yeah, it's going to be great.
So before you go, Kate, yes. Not over yet, you have to tell us something that brought you joy this week.
Well, I celebrate my birthday yesterday.
Oh, which happy birthday.
Thank you. All Saints Day. So I get to celebrate my birthday with our little saints in heaven.
You do.
And so that was it was really nice, that realization that, yeah, I'm celebrating my birthday with them. And birthday's just a lovely time to hear from people and that certainly
feel
happened.
Loved.
Yeah, that's right, feel loved. And how about you, Jess?
Well, mine's to music. It's not as deep as yours. But I stumbled across – well, a friend sent me an email the other day saying, listen to these guys, and they're Franciscan Friars of the Renewal.
Oh, yeah,
and they have
yep.
a new CD out called Poco a Poco.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it in the show notes, but the music is really awesome and I think your teenagers might just like it.
Oh,
so,
it's worth a try.
Yeah, very kind of John Mayer-esque, pretty funky. Give it a listen.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, that's great.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's the other thing too, Jess, I would say music sometimes helps me pray. So when I couldn't have words, putting on Christian music that were kind of singing out what I couldn't say really helped me too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think music has a profound effect on when words aren't enough or words can't be formed. Music is so inspiring.
Yeah.
And I've only just stumbled across music, worship music, in the last 12 months. Not stumbled across it, but decided, actually, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, okay.
And I love it.
Yeah, there's lots out there, that's for sure. Yeah.
It's a whole new world for me.
Yeah, great. Anyway,
thanks, Kate.
Okay, thanks, Jess.
See you.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, share it with a friend or someone who you know that would love to hear that.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.